took a cubby as I short muted him.
Another member, Professor Ishmael, Ms. Dooley, esteemed ladies and gentlemen, we are meeting here today to check the impact or to have an independent analysis of the 12 states of the nation address relating to tourism. Yeah, really, we're looking for a breakdown and then the impact of the policies that have been proposed, or perhaps activities that have been proposed, the projects that have been proposed, what their impact is likely to be to tourism. That is transport, the development of dams, the development of walls, of roads, and what the impact of the type of growth, development, and poverty reduction approach that the government has taken, what impact is it likely to have to tourism? And the look at the interventions, and I think most of the members welcomed the introduction of an institution that is the President Infrastructure Coordinating Committee. A benefit from our experience in project management and skills development arising from the 2010 World Cup. The issue of railroad water infrastructure in as far as opportunities in tourism, are they likely to produce any opportunities or activities in the way of tourism? You touched on administrative tax, electricity tax, tariffs that we pay. And then I think most of us would be happy about the improvement of roads in the Northwest, which was our proposal last year when we went to the Northwest with the N12 in a dilapidated state, and the issue of their infrastructure as well, and then undeveloped dams like Daum. Perhaps they are going to have some hope if they are roads, because that will unlock a lot of development. The issue of the SKA bin, is it likely to have an impact or not? If so, is it positive? Is it going to be not positive? Because it may be impacting on the environment on one side, on the other side, it may bring in a lot of people. There are a lot of heritage projects as well. What I call the liberation heritage, like the issue of Matola in Mozambique, Norman in Museum, Freedom Park Museum, Steve Biko Heritage Center that will be developed. And then there could be other centers. This would stimulate. But this is, but thankfully, that is not my task. It is the task of Ms. Dooley on one side and Professor Ishmael. So I would hand over the presentation to you, Prof. and Ms. Dooley.
Thank you, Jefferson. Good morning, honorable members. I hope I'll be able to give a much broader perspective on the State of the Nation Address. What I'm going to do is to give the tourism perspective, as the chairperson has already outlined. Firstly, what I'm going to do is to look at the 2011 FONA, what we had then, and in comparison, what we're having in the 2012 FONA. So the areas that have direct and indirect impact on tourism. Last year, we said the president announced that there would be increasing tourist access through flexible visa requirements. There will be improving landing slots at foreign airports, improved tourism infrastructure. The importance of public-private partnership was mentioned, the importance of cultural sector, and the role of state-owned enterprises and development finance institutions, the support for small, medium, and micro enterprises, the introduction of the new growth path, with tourism having been outlined as one of the key sectors that needs to drive job creation. And in the 2012 FONA, the things that I've highlighted were, in terms of infrastructural development, there's electricity, there's roads, there's airports, there's railway roads, and there's institutional and governance issues that needs to be looked at. There's the Northwest intervention, as the chairperson has already highlighted. There's a square kilometer array radius telescope, and there is a heritage and cultural refocus project. Now, if you look at 2011 and 2012, it definitely shows that there is continuation of what was said last year in terms of the input into tourism. So the same idea of job creation still continues with more interventions to ensure that there's more benefitification for people on the ground, and there is actual infrastructure development that will facilitate easy tourism accessibility and easy investments in other areas such as Northwest, whereby people would not be able to invest prior because of the road infrastructure that was there and the lack of electricity and so forth. Okay, in terms of progress that has been done in terms of the 2011 FONA, the president, I think, highlighted that through the review of the midterm report, there was steady progress in terms of health, education, crime, energy, water provision, and rural development. That, in essence, tells us that if we've got a good health system, we've got good education system, we are dealing with crime, we are dealing with issues of energy, issues of water, we are actually on our way in trying to move a step closer into ensuring that tourists feel comfortable coming into our country without worrying about this kind of issues. So it is work in progress, but we are going towards a point whereby we are working for the better good in order to assist tourism growth and development in the country. The issue of improved landing slots in foreign airports, we were not able to get information from public enterprise or either SAA or AXA on whether they have been able to get new landing slots in foreign airports in order to facilitate more people coming into the country through our national carrier. And that is one thing that we still need to look at, on whether are we expanding in terms of foreign airports and landing slots. In terms of the expanded public works program that is pioneered by the Department of Tourism, last year when they gave us the biannual report, after they gave us the annual report analysis, it was indicated that although the EPWP program is not working that well, but it has already picked up some speed, and was still falling short of meeting its target for this end of the financial year, but it was picking some speed. So we need to ensure that the committee focuses on programs such as the EPWP, because those, in terms of tourism, the tourism department and our contribution towards job creation, that is where most of our interventions are in the expanded public works program. So we need to put more energy and more focus into those programs and what projects are on there. We need to be able to see the projects. In terms of the merger between KULA, the South African Microfinance Apex, and the IDC, it was finalized in November, but Treasury and the DPSA still had to sign on the final paper to say that this is now under one umbrella, but it was still under separated umbrellas. Although it has been acknowledged and it has been implemented, it still needs to be signed off to say that now they're under one umbrella. And also the other thing was the 10 billion rand fund that was supposed to assist in job creation. That fund, we are not sure how much of the 1.5 billion that has been used up to the far has gone into tourism projects. So we also need to find out more in terms of what is the contribution of tourism businesses into that particular fund. What are we getting out of that? Because also tourism, as a job creation driver, it needs to be able to gain access into such funds so that we're able to contribute more positively into the growth of the economy. In terms of the National Conventions Bureau, there were outcries about business tourism and that we did not have a structure that channels all the conferences and all that. So it's actually very interesting that we have been able to come up with the National Conventions Bureau, and we are hoping that from beginning of this year it will be then be able to evaluate how far the Conventions Bureau is taking us further into ensuring that issues of conferences, meetings, and centers are more in the country. So we're able to bid for conferences in a more structured manner. So we're hoping that that will also have positive results, because it only started last year that the Conventions Bureau was introduced. So we're hoping that from then we can then be able to fast-track growth into the business tourism industry. The issue of flexible visa requirements, we try to get information from Home Affairs and Foreign Affairs. There are visa waivers for different countries, but it is not clear which visa waivers were done in the 2011 year only. So we still need to filter those and say these were done in 2011, and these, so to show that we are moving forth, because in as much as what we have now, it's just an indication of the different waivers that we have for different countries, but it is not evident for which year were those implemented. And I think the president spoke about the 365,000 people that were employed last year. And this number, if you look at the labor force survey, it indicates that most of those jobs are in the formal sector. So this is a formal sector kind of job. These are more like permanent jobs. And going to the next slide. The next slide is actually an employment trend per sector. How much has different sector contributed in terms of employment? And if you look at tourism with different interventions, tourism can fall under trade, it falls under transport, which is the fifth column. And under trade, there was growth in terms of year-on-year change, the difference between 2011 and 2012. 2010 and 2011. So there was a difference. There was growth in terms of the trade industry. There was growth. There was a bit of a decline in terms of the transport industry, which also is part of the tourism sector. And in terms of the finance and business cluster, there was growth, which is also representative. A small amount of it is representative of the tourism sector, because it's finance and business services. In terms of infrastructure development, now I'm going into the 2012 State of the Nation Address, done with the progress that has been done from the 2011 State of the Nation Address. The president announced the issue of development of airports, issues of electricity and roads. When we speak about electricity, I think when we went on oversight, we gathered that a lot of these establishments, their concern was that the electricity costs were too high, and on top of that, there was still load shedding, and that affected how the businesses were run. So you would have tourists in the place, and there would be load shedding. So there were those kind of issues that people were facing. There were issues of roads in the Northwest. There were issues of roads in other places as well. And it was quite interesting that the president has touched on this. There's issues of the mining sector, which has to do mostly with the railroads. So most of the railroads infrastructure that has been announced is in order to facilitate the mining industry. But what we can gather from there is that in terms of tourism, there will be a lot of business tourism that we can gain from that. Because if you look at most of the companies that are in the mining industry in the country, they are mostly international investors. So if those people come into the country in terms of investing and all that and meetings and running their business in the country, that means that you get more business tourists that are coming into the country. And I think from the presentation last week by Psyche, it was evident that those people spend more time and more money in the country than our normal usual tourists that come for leisure and all those kind of things. So this thing of infrastructure is going to promote accessibility to tourist attraction areas, like the chairperson has already explained in terms of the Taung in Northwest. I mean, Taung is a very beautiful place, but in terms of for you to get investors to invest in a particular area and develop around the dam, you need to have accessible roads and you need to have electricity infrastructure. And those are the kind of things that are going to make the conducive environment for business investments and entrepreneurship to bloom in that particular area, in those particular areas. And that translates to job opportunities and reasonable service provision. Because if people have accessibility to electricity, they don't have to charge you much higher prices and for food and all those kind of things. So issues of accessibility to a lot of services, actually, they impact on the service that you get at the end as a user. And the president also highlighted on issues of institutional and governance issues. That, in terms of tourism, translates to intergovernmental relations. It translates to how do we make it work as a tourism portfolio committee? How do we ensure that the department's intergovernmental relations are in full force and they're working? Because if you look at some of the things that we have highlighted already, you're speaking of passport visa waivers, you're speaking of roads, you're speaking of all those kind of things. Those are the things that the department should be able to say, if there is a particular development in an area which is done by the Expanded Public Works Program, it should not be an investment that goes down the drain because there are no roads to go there. So the issue of intergovernmental relations is very important in terms of tourism. So we need to be able to say, the department, what is it doing in terms of intergovernmental relations? How are we doing in terms of that? Because I'm sure the members who went to Mexico could see that there's a structure called FONATUR that interacts with the different departments to say, we want to develop here, and we want roads, we want this, so that people can be able to invest freely, knowing that their investments will not go down the drain. Issues of alignment with the three spheres of government, those are critical issues for our department as well, because now we have the National Tourism Sector Strategy that needs to filter down through to provinces, it needs to go to regions, it needs to go to districts and local municipalities. And that needs to work for us to have proper tourism growth and development in the country that will ultimately contribute to job creation and decreasing the unemployment rate that we currently have. Issues of accountability. We need to have an accountable department that will be able to say, this is how much we've invested in the EPWP program, this is how many jobs we've created, and this is where we're going forth. Issues of transparency, responsiveness, consultation, public participation. Those are the things that the committee has raised in numerous of times to say that issues of public participation is very crucial to the growth of tourism because it does not assist for us to develop products that people have no access to, that people don't even understand how to gain access to. So those are the kind of issues that we need to continue as a committee to pioneer so that we're able to move forth in terms of this tourism development. The chairperson has mentioned the heritage and cultural projects, mostly which are liberal. The issues of the struggle icons and all those kind of things. And those are the things that make South Africa what it needs to be. You know, that's the culture, that's the heritage of South Africa. And most of the time, people come here to see those kind of things. You say, you know, they need to see the difference. Pre and post apartheid. People come here to say, oh, it was like this, now it's like this. So those are the things that will advance heritage tourism in the country. So we need to be able to ensure that in as much as there's infrastructure development around those particular areas, those areas are kept at an acceptable level in terms of acceptable tourist level. Like when you went to other attractions, you see that the attractions are taken care of. You know, in Mexico, you go there's passion to take care of these things because it does not assist for us to develop heritage sites and heritage structures and they only are beneficial to us as communities for a particular year or so forth and they don't benefit us going forth. So we need to be able that we become custodians of these particular sites that have been declared because this will revitalize the heritage and cultural tourism in the country. And it will also go a long way in benefiting the poor communities because most of these heritage sites are mostly located in rural areas and those should be beneficial to the rural communities. There's an issue of the square kilometer array, the radio scope, that was mentioned by the president. This is still in the bidding. We are still bidding for it. The bidding is between Australia and South Africa. So I guess we need to put more effort, although as the president has announced, that should be finalized this year. So they're going to say who has won the bid. So if South Africa wins the bid, the telescope itself is going to extend to Namibia, Botswana, and it's going to benefit most of the SADC region countries. It doesn't only benefit South Africa, but it benefits the SADC region to a great extent. And those benefits, they include a lot of things. This project was actually started in 2003. It was endorsed in 2003 through the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Program, which seeks to advance scientific knowledge in the country, and especially in the field of astronomy. And the benefit of this is that there will be a lot of education tourism. I think when we went to the Northern Cape, they highlighted some of the benefits, the issues of financial investment. There's a lot of financial investment into this project that will assist communities. There'll be a lot of job opportunities. Universities will be able to go there. So there will be research groups from all over the world who would want to come here and look at the information that will be collected by the radio telescope and use it for research purposes. So that in itself, it's education tourism, because people come into the country to learn more. So that will be very beneficial to the country. There will be a whole lot of technological exposure to kids in the country, like especially in the Northern Cape, which is very critical, looking at the kind of environment that people are living in there, and capacity building for the different communities. So there's a lot of benefits that are going to come from the radio telescope itself. Implications for Parliament for 2012. Most of these implications that are highlighted here, they're just continuous, because there are some of the implications that were highlighted last year. So there needs to be close monitoring of the tourism-linked infrastructure development through the expanded public works program. There needs to be constant engagement with the Department of Tourism with regards to cultural tourism. There is a need for the committee to monitor the different programs pioneered by the department to attract investors for infrastructure development in rural areas. There is a need for Parliament to oversee that there is alignment in promotion of events which takes place in different provinces. Parliament needs to oversee that the different provinces also adhere to the 30-day payment period for services. That is still a mandate for government, so we still need to ensure that that is adhered to. Although last year I think we're still on track in terms of the department. Parliament needs to constantly advocate for domestic tourism, because domestic tourism is more of a backbone of tourism of any other country, because in terms of this global world where the economic crisis and all that, you need to have strong domestic tourism in order to sustain tourism of any particular country. Parliament needs to continuously engage with the Department on the protection and conservation of sites that of tourism significant, and Parliament needs to have an ongoing review and dialogue with the key stakeholders, especially the Department of Tourism, the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, and IGC. This is specifically for the small businesses, because we're still struggling to ensure that small businesses get the necessary support that they need to get in order to advance. That's why, in most instances, you get businesses lasting only for 2 years, because they don't get the necessary support. They don't get the necessary startup advisors and all those kind of things that they need to get in order to sustain themselves further. And Parliament also needs to continuously engage the Department on the protection and conservation of sites that are of tourism significance. And Parliament needs to ascertain that intergovernmental relations for tourism growth and development are well underway. For example, foreign affairs, cooperative governance, public enterprise, transport. And Parliament also needs to find out how many companies in the tourism industry were recipients of the job creation fund by IGC. And also that Parliament needs to be more diligent in the oversight process in order for us to have a more growth in the tourism industry and development. Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Duli, for a very enlightening input. And, I think before we ask any questions or we make our inputs, let us allow Professor Ishmael to make his input, and let us just note our questions, and then where we need clarification, just note areas where we need clarification. I liked this input because it was a continuation from the last State of the Nation analysis, where it builds on and it says how far we went this time last year, and then what has changed, and what is likely to change, and the role of Parliament. Some of the aspects, perhaps, because of the many things that we have in mind, we as the people that are engaged in the field do not see. For instance, we were supposed to monitor this 30-day payment period services. I think I don't remember us checking these things when we were going on our oversight visits. And then it should be part of the list of the things that we are looking for. And then the upkeep of the attractions, heritage, and other attractions. What is their upkeep? If you remember, when we went to the Northern Cape, we went to Uppington, there was a complaint that the museums, there are no funds to maintain museums and other cultural heritage things that was not only there. If you went to Kuruman as well, there was this thing, a concern about the upkeep of roads, the negligence of the Kuruman Heritage Center, which where the first Bible was written. So it's all those things that are domestic attractions, heritage attractions that we need to oversee, because sometimes some municipalities do not feel that they've got to look into them, because perhaps they think their main role is to deliver services, build toilets, municipality roads, and provide water. So the list, I think some of the things we've got to flag, especially for our oversight. When we go out and we are going to go to two rural provinces this year, it is Bumalanga or whatever, but I'm not too sure now of which provinces we are going to visit this year. We've got to list these things that we've got to look into, and keep monitoring them, and then perhaps ask to visit one of the most significant museums there, and see what is happening. But without much ado, it's over to you, Prof.
Honorable Chair, and all members present, good morning to everybody. Chairperson, I'm honored by you addressing me as Prof, but for now it is Doctor. I am aspiring towards becoming a professor. So thanks. Most definitely this presentation will be a continuation of the 2011 State of the Nation address, and it will be in a similar vein as done by Ms. Joyce. In 2009, the National Planning Commission produced a National Development Plan for South Africa and addressed the elimination of poverty and inequalities. The President's call in his address was for job creation and in order to eradicate poverty. We should not, however, forget that 2011 was declared the year for job creation. Since the Job Fund began operating in June 2011, an amount of 1 billion rand has been committed for job creation. As part of its oversight exercise, the Portfolio Committee could request the National Department of Tourism to conduct a survey to produce statistics on the number of jobs that were created since 2011 with respect to the tourism industry, as well as determining the number of tourism-related businesses which have applied and received funding. The President also mentioned that under Section 12.1 of the Income Tax Act, that an amount of 20 billion rand of incentives was made available to support new manufacturing projects. Furthermore, it was mentioned that seven projects with an investment value of 8.4 billion rand was approved. Indeed, here exists another opportunity for communities to apply for funding to manufacture clothing, memorabilia, arts and crafts, footwear, and leather items for tourist consumption. The tourism sector should not forgo this opportunity to apply for funding and utilize it for job creation. In 2010, the new growth path framework identified tourism, amongst others, as job drivers. The Green Economy Accord that the President referred to in his speech should be adopted by tourism stakeholders in an effort to commit business to develop benchmarks to support the idea of creating jobs. The Minister for Economic Development, Mr. Ibrahim Patel, stated, and I quote, "The green economy can create a large number of jobs and help to create a sustainable future for this and the next generation," unquote. The Higher Education Minister, Blade Nzamandi, said his department was putting South Africa's universities and its sector education and training authorities, that is the CETAs, together to ensure that their projects supported the green economy by, amongst other things, growing the number of artisans in the country. The tourism industry should come on board and develop a framework policy on how it envisages to give effect to the objectives of the Green Economy Accord. The President confirmed in his speech that dialogue between business, labor, and the community sector indicate that an employment rate came down from 25% to 23.9%. And this is attributed to a number of jobs that were created. Already 10 billion rand has been set aside by the IDC for job creation. The National Department of Tourism should encourage tourism businesses to apply for such funding with the aim of creating more jobs. President Zuma mentions education in 10 different places in his 2012 Sona speech. From the statistics mentioned by President Zuma, the grade R enrollment increased from 300,000 in 2003 to 705,000 in 2011. I therefore propose that not only do we invest in producing more teachers who can teach mathematics, science, and African languages, but that we also promote tourism education at schools. Every student after matriculating should have an appreciation of tourism and understand how it contributes to the GDP of the country, as well as the potential it has to create jobs. Furthermore, President Zuma stated in his speech, and I quote, "With regards to higher education, we are exceeding targets," unquote. According to the President, 14,000 learners were placed in workplace learning opportunities over the past year. I want to concur with this and state that the Tourism and Events Department at the Cape Peninsula University of Technology has a 100% success rate of placing students undertaking their in-service training in the tourism and events industry. Going back to the 2011 Sona speech, I made reference in my presentation in 2011 that the Tourism Department ought to host a tourism conference. I want to commend the Portfolio Committee on Tourism for hosting a summit on 28 February 2011, where a number of our tourism students from CPUT were invited to attend. In this regard, the Faculty of Business at the Cape Peninsula University of Technology will be hosting a seminar on the state of tourism research in the country and at higher education institutions. We will be extending, amongst other invitations, to the Minister of Tourism and the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee to address us at this important event. The tourism seminar will take place on Thursday, 24 May 2012, at the Hotel School in Granger Bay. We also intend signing the Memorandum of Understanding with the National Department of Tourism and CPUT at this event. At the moment, I can say that the MOU, it is with our legal department at the institution for the input and ratification. President Zuma, in his 2012 SONA address, announced that a number of heritage projects will be initiated to promote social cohesion. In my overview of SONA in 2011, I mentioned that a national heritage route celebrating icons who contributed to the liberation struggle and also cultural tourism should be promoted on the Cape Flats. I therefore proposed, for example, the construction of a museum as a heritage project on the Cape Flats, where the heritage of its people is showcased so that tourists undertaking the cultural tour of the Cape Flats can experience this unique offering. Again, in my overview of SONA 2011, I mentioned that more resources should be directed to small businesses by merging Kula, SA Microfinance Apex Fund, and the IDC. It is pleasing to note that the President in his 2012 SONA address mentioned that, and I quote, progress has also been made in amalgamating small business institutions, and a new entity will be launched in 2012. In my overview of SONA 2011, I mentioned that tourism infrastructure on the Cape Flats should be developed and cultural tourism should be promoted. In this regard, the final draft of the National Heritage and Cultural Tourism Strategy serves to guide and provide strategic direction to the development and promotion of heritage and cultural tourism in South Africa. I am pleased to note that the President in his 2012 SONA address invited all of us to join government in a massive infrastructure drive. This initiative must be welcomed, and I believe tourism can benefit from this massive infrastructure development. In my overview of SONA 2011, I also mentioned that cruise tourism should be promoted. The market demand strategy of Transnet, as mentioned by President Zuma, will be investing 300 billion rand in capital projects. At least 100 billion rand will be earmarked for projects in the ports. As an example, on 24 February 2012, the Queen Mary II berthed at Duncan Dock with 2,000 visitors on board for a period of 3 days. The opportunity exists for passenger cruise liners to dock at Cape Town Harbour and as soon as the necessary infrastructure has been developed. Passenger cruise liners have the potential to create a number of jobs for tourist guides, emerging tour operators, as well as benefit the tourism value chain. In my deliberation in 2012, I stated that the Tourism Portfolio Committee should lobby structures such as the African Union, New Partnership for Africa's Development, Pan-African Parliament, and the South African Development Community to market South Africa on the African continent. I'm pleased to state that President Zuma in his 2012 SONA speech mentioned, and I quote, the Presidential Infrastructure Championing Initiative, unquote, that is the North-South Road and the Rail Corridor, which can be used by tourism marketers to promote Africa as a destination rather than only South Africa. This will create a sense of value in the mind of the tourists. This initiative will afford tourists a larger variety of tour itineraries to select from. Furthermore, the President alluded to the enormous potential along the West Coast for the country and the need to improve infrastructure to unlock this potential. Research should be undertaken to investigate the tourism potential available after the improvement of the infrastructure of the West Coast. In my assessment of SONA 2012, I stated that, and I quote, tourism is to be boosted by improving tourism infrastructure, and hosting more international sporting events. While the President informed us that we will be hosting the Africa Cup of Nations in 2013. In summary, the tourism industry has the potential to create jobs, and funding is available to support it. The Green Economy Accord can create a large number of jobs. Tourism education is a key stimulus to job creation. Tourism research should be promoted. Heritage and cultural tourism to be promoted. Cruise tourism has the potential to create jobs. Last but not least, promoting Africa as a tourism destination will create many opportunities. Then my second last slide, the impact on the Tourism Portfolio Committee. The Portfolio Committee should continue with oversight visits to tourism initiatives and projects to monitor progress and compliance with strategic and annual plans of the Department of Tourism. The PC should monitor government's adherence to the call for job creation through meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. Thirdly, job creation should enhance youth development. The Department of Tourism and National Youth Development Agency and the private sector should facilitate youth development in tourism programs and promote youth tourism enterprises. Fourth point, the Department of Tourism, private sector, and tourism stakeholders should develop strategies for sustainable tourism development, specifically in respect of small businesses. Next point, the Portfolio Committee should create space for public discussions on a range of topics, including sustainable tourism development, public-private partnerships, creating business opportunities for small businesses, creating public awareness and appreciation of the tourism sector, making the tourism sector attractive for visitors and locals, environmental and social-cultural impact of tourism. Evaluate the Department of Tourism's policies and programs on sustainable tourism development and poverty alleviation. Next point, commission research to investigate whether a regulatory framework within which a code of ethics can be developed for the tourism sector. Explore ways in which rural areas, townships, and the Cape Flats can be made more attractive and accessible for the international visitor. And last point, the economic advantages of tourism as a major source of income and employment leads to its active promotion by government all over the world, often at the expense of the environment. Thus, the Portfolio Committee could identify best practices in sustainable tourism development in developing countries. In conclusion, I would like to remind all of us of the appeal made by the President in his concluding remarks, and I quote, "I would like to appeal to all our people to join hands, as they always do, as we deal decisively with the triple challenges of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. Nobody will do this for us. It is in our hands, and we are all equal to the task." I thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ismail, for a very, very inspiring input. We really, really feel inspired, and we appreciate to see ourselves through the mirror of other people as well, because sometimes you can deceive yourself and think that you are doing a wonderful job, but only to find that it's because you are only assessing yourself and you are not giving space to other role players to look at you and say what you look like. They say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So as one of the beholders, we appreciate what you have seen, and We may not totally agree with everything, but definitely it is an input that is wonderful, that is of very, very important value, and is going to take not only the portfolio committee forward, not only the government forward, but the country forward. And as we learned in Mexico, I think we've got to develop this relationship between research institutions and then tourism. It's there, but I don't think it is enough, because they told us there that of the 644 universities, they try and work with all and each one of them. And the knowledge that they've generated, the research that they generate, has propelled them very, very far in as far as development of tourism is concerned. They are having magical towns, what they call magical towns. They just go to an area with a potential, they look at it, and they have an institution to advise, an institution that is experienced in project management, experienced in financial management. They have the input of the university, and the success that they have is quite telling. Cancun was a stretch of wild beaches about 15 years ago. What was the period? 35 years ago, it was just beaches and trees. But right now, it is one of the leading attractions in the world for not only for leisure, but for business tourism as well. So I think we have that capacity working together, as we have said, and as South African people, to decisively change the picture of our tourism to an even greater height. And thank you very much for your input. But without saying much more, I would like to give this opportunity to honorable members to ask all questions, including questions of clarity. I have stopped allowing people asking questions of clarity only, because they get mixed. So now you can ask any other question, clarity and otherwise. So Ms. Njome, then Mr. Faro.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I suppose we can refer to both presentations. In the last presentation, the question of information on progress that has been made, as well, for instance, your culture, 55 jobs, according to how many from the provinces.
Or speaking to your mic, one
job. Thank you very much. And I think you have heard what I've said already. Now, Chairperson, I was saying with regard to the presentation by the researcher, but this point also comes out in the analysis by the universities, the Expert of Technologies, or Cape Peninsula University, that right now sometimes we are told 365,000 jobs have been created. But for us in tourism, we are interested to know how many of them have come from tourism. So if, for instance, that evidence is possible, we would appreciate it very much. Like, for instance, the question of the improved landing slots in foreign airports, we would like to know exactly where these are and what improvements are we talking about. You know, things like that. So it means that we still need to do more research to be able to get the exact information on this issue. Now, secondly, again to the researcher, the question of the effectiveness of the extended public works program in the area of tourism. Well, for me, this is very important because, as I've said many times in the committee, sometimes you try to really identify how tourism is assisting in creating jobs through the extended public works program, but it is very, very difficult. Unless perhaps then you can get the information that has been done by research, and then you can be able to say, yes, indeed, tourism has contributed to the EPWP. But the point I wanted to raise on this one in particular is I think I need to be reminded, the committee will remember, that at one time we had a presentation, the DG was there. We were looking at the budget, I think. I'm not sure, but we were looking at the finances anyway. And it turned out that we were looking at the budget. Some money, quite a big amount, had to be withdrawn. It was not used. And the explanation we got was that the department found it very difficult to monitor, you know, the use of the money in the area of EPWP. So when now I hear that tourism is contributing to the extended public works program, I do worry, because I want to know how, because they have this big problem, that they had the funds right enough, but it was not possible for them to monitor how the funds were used. And because they did not want to be seen as a department that has spent the funds carelessly and fruitlessly, then they have to withdraw that amount. I think we need to look into that. Now, another request I think I would like to make to the university presenter, if your document could be made available to us, this presentation in particular, I think personally I would appreciate it very much, because that presentation really speaks to us.
It has not been circulated to you. It should have been circulated to all of us. Huh? Please do circulate that document.
We don't have the document unless we
wanted to make sure that it was circulated before, and it has to be circulated now if it is not circulated so far. Okay.
Yeah, all right then. Then I won't make that request, because I was going to say it really speaks to us, and I think personally I appreciate that very much. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, Mom Job. I don't know whether the question you're asking about EPWP can be answered by the presenter, because it comes from the angle of the department, that they said they were not sure of the control of the fund, and therefore they could not discuss it.
Actually, it's almost like I'm just making a comment, because I'm saying, let's not contradict ourselves and give the impression that for tourism, EPWP has created jobs. It may have, but then this other program that they have. And so the question would be, how many jobs have they created through EPWP? Are we able to tell? And are we able to tell how much that withdrawal of the funds received for EPWP affected, for instance, their program? That's what I was trying to say.
Okay, thanks. Honorable Faro.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the presenters. I found this quite enlightening for someone. I think they've done a lot of work for us here, which we'd normally have to do and scratch our head about. But a couple of things that I would like to just sort of raise as more follow-up, really, because clearly we tend to lose sight of what's said and then doesn't get done. And it doesn't really impact on this particular portfolio committee per se, but I just fortuitously, I was talking to you as we walked in here before this morning, when I bumped into one of the CEO of SATA, and I said, he's just come back from India, and he said to me, you know, the market in India and China for tourism in this country and Japan is so great. And I said, well, why aren't they coming here? They said, well, they are, but there's hindrances. And the biggest hindrance they have is the aspect of visa, let's call it, processing. And although I said to him, but didn't we handle the World Cup? You know, I mean, we must have been. He said, no, there was waivers done for that. And we are still seen as a country of constraint when it comes to those sort of type of issues. Now, in the 2011 SONA, there was a thing which the doctor quite rightly raised, and I think also Joyce, you also raised it, was that there should be more flexible visa requirement aspects. Now, we need to actually call Home Affairs to this committee, Chair, if I could propose that, and put them onto foot and ask them whether, in fact, they're doing something about this, because we can't afford to lose that type of tourists that want to come here and spend money in this country for the sake of just the fact that the visa is the constraint. And he said to me, I said, well, what are you talking about? He said, we're talking about a facility and a computer processing that can handle 300,000 to 400,000 applications at a time. Those are the sort of things in the world out there that actually require to be looked at, you know, when we talk about bringing people here. So that's one of the requests I would put to him. And the second one, in terms of that follow-up, is the landing slots. Now, I've just come from transport, and I know what the implications of that is. It's usually slot for slot, you know, from one country to another and one airline to another. But I can assure you that, you know, other than a few that we got at King Shaka when that thing opened up in terms of an international destination going sort of to the east, we just really haven't got this. And I think that our biggest problem is this particular bureaucracy which associates ourselves one country to another, when in fact we should be opening up the skies and liberalizing it, particularly within Africa, where there's a massive market, you know, that is sitting on our doorstep. So I think we need to bring AXA here and ask them what they're doing about those particular things. So very quick to put our tariffs up, you know. Last year they wanted to raise it by 133%. But, you know, that just chases people away, because every time you land, you've got to pay more. And then just getting back to what Mama Njobe said about the job issue. In my mind somewhere, and I can't, you know, be factual about it, I seem to remember someone saying to me that for every tourist that comes to the country, there's like 2.5 jobs or something. Now, surely, if we know how many tourists come to the country, we could maybe answer some of those questions of how many jobs were created. Because if those figures are real in terms of what it means, then we should be able to calculate. But I still think it's a very important question that the doctor and Joyce raised, that we need to question that to see how much or how many jobs were created in this industry, so we can keep an oversight role in it. I think, basically, I've covered myself, but I'm a bit naive, and I don't know what the Green Economy Accord is, so maybe, you know, if there's been a presentation here, Chair, maybe I'd like to get something about that. I don't know much about it. And, you know, it looks like the opportunities that sit here, and particularly when we saw the Queen Mary come in, is just untold, you know, and we need to try and also push those port authorities to make sure that the facilities are right there. And it's very pleasing to see that money is going to be put aside, that $100 billion for that. So, thanks.
Let us do this. Let us stop now and have our tea. And then when we come back, the further questions from Honorable Kwarai, and then Honorable Zigalala, and then we take it from there. Okay.
Yeah, it's 10 minutes.
Valentine, I'm black.
bakubantu banibakutala namuntlha va tisanela ti-flowers u kuva tshame ofisini flower ti nghena va ku yi xavele hi munhu ka ko ti xavela Akujiwi hinkwaso dzaka sa huma Valentine's Day. I don't celebrate Valentine's Day.
I did.
I'm so against Valentine's Day. It's segregated.
Hi, babe, where's your
it's segregated us.
No, man, where's your romantic spirit?
It's segregated
us. Getting cold, but you're sleeping. Maybe you're getting a fever, man. You must take this
one. This one? Ever since I was diagnosed with aspirin, I never took this. And I don't take aspirin.
Then you must take that acetamol.
I don't think I can take it. It doesn't seem to
work. Panado.
So it's the safest, but not the most effective.
The aspirin is old school, but it still works for people. Maybe you must, when you finish up here, you may just go home. Yeah, go home. Huh? Did you eat something this morning? Nothing.
I drank rooibos and ginger tea.
No, man, that's not gonna. The rooibos makes you more angry.
That's the funniest thing. You know, rooibos doesn't make me angry.
It don't.
I hear everybody saying that.
Makes your stomach work and it makes you hungry.
But I drink rooibos. That's the only tea that I drink.
Yeah.
I don't drink any other tea.
Oh. Makes you hungry.
I've traveled in Mexico. Well, I want some leaf tea that's incredible. And I could not get it.
Huh?
Every day I thought it was going to get better.
I hope you didn't pick up something, Vee.
Mama, look like, I miss some of the young when I lay in the tea.
All had the same problem.
Oh, my tea. How come black tea and alcohol are so many people? It's better than Starbucks. Oh. That in this.
Ooh. I should
think of me. Hey, Manjo. Makul. Oh, the health that I think will sell up high Mexico.
Yeah, it is.
Healthy. It will sell up high Mexico cream. It helps.
Yeah. I am not healthy, but you are not in
general. What's nice in Mexico? It's food.
You know.
Huh?
Yeah.
But even Mexican food, Mexican food.
It needs getting used to.
Yeah.
And it's not even spicy. Everyone says spicy.
They didn't say they throw chilies and stuff and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to strong food here.
Mm.
I mean, chicken.
Mama?
What?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We really did not expect to be remembered. Thank you. Now let us then go on with the questions and answer as we go on, starting with Mr. Kwarai, then with Mama Uzgana, and see where it takes us from here. But let us just look at the value of this thing, the information we got. I think it's quite valuable.
Thank the two presenters. From my side, it's very clear that the two papers are actually talks to us as members of this committee, to our work that we're supposed to do, especially on the oversight. And I appreciate the contribution from the two presenters, Chair. I don't really have a question or a comment, but I think this shows that we are now have to go to the deeper part of this when we meet with the department and the minister to deal with this matter, because it shows that even the president has also alluded to some of our tasks. And I appreciate your presentation, and it will actually going to assist us a lot, Chair. When we engage with the department in future, these two documentation. Thank you very much.
Well, in fact, thanks very much, Mr. Kwarai and Mamu Sigala. But also, it just shows that we've got to do these things together all the time. There has got to be national dialogue all the time. We cannot stop from that. We cannot say that you are governing with a few professors. You've got to engage with all the people, like seminars, like summits, like opening spaces, you are saying, for national dialogue. And I think that is quite telling, especially coming from the Mexican experience. Mam Zagala.
Chairperson, really and truly, one cannot say there is a question or what. Both presentations were wonderful. They were excellent. Because now, for instance, from the researcher, I must say that as an old lady, Ugogo, you know, you feel so good inwardly when you look at our young ones, you know, when they are delivering in this fashion, you just say, why not the majority, at least, not all, why not if our children would follow, you know. Congratulations, my child. Keep it up. We are very proud of you. Keep it up, as I say. Well, she has said all. But now, there is just one other thing which I would like just to mention, the EPWP program. I'm just saying, maybe, Chairperson, I don't know if it can be possible that one day we invite them just to come and talk to us about their program. Because you'll find that some of us as members who are not very clear about how does it go about. And secondly, I heard of Kula IDC. It used to be Kula Nziga. Nziga has just disappeared into thin air. But now I hear of IDC. Those are there for funding, isn't it? Yeah, when, even those, you know, at times, the ruling party says, working together we can do more. I think, you know, we talk about people who are very much around, who are, you know, just, why not one day? Because these are very important people. There's people are just mad that Kula is doing nothing for the people. It's a big cry outside here. And it does affect our department, tourism, in a way. Because now, I don't want to criticize you when I haven't sat down with you, then we share talks, ideas. But now, maybe one day the Kula people, I don't know about this IDC, I'm not clear, if they can just come and say something that, if you don't get funding, it's because of ABCD. It is not because Kula needs you. Or it is not because you are not a card-carrying member of the ANC. Because now the main talk outside here, Kala, you can't get funding if you don't have the card. Yeah. So such things, Jefferson, can be corrected. When the opposition parties are here, but there is no such. One day I went for him. I said, I don't get land for the women to do gardening. It's because I'm not a taxpaying woman. And she said, it's not like that, Imam Zigalala. It's because of ABC. Then I understood. Thank you for that. Just that. And then, let me know. Coming to Dr. Ishmael. I'm telling you, these children, they can surprise you at times. They just go, as if you can have them in your pocket for education purposes. Thank you. Doctor says, apply for funding and utilize it to start small businesses. He says, you apply for funding with the aim of creating more jobs. Because the president says, let's have more jobs. For me and you and you, if I happen to get that small business, I'll be expanding job creation. Okay? Tourism to be taught in our schools. Maybe just say, I'm not yet happy as to whether it is really happening. Or at what percentage, what level, teaching of tourism in our respective schools. We know it is generating more economy for this country. That is what we discovered when we went to Mexico. To my mind, It was as if there is no other department in Mexico except tourism. So I've heard some of my colleagues say, why not just put it clearly in percentage form that tourism has done so much towards the economy of South Africa. There's one other point that I gathered from Dr. Ishmael, chairperson, not putting Tandizi. It seems as if it's quite a time now that we have since left having conferences, tourism. When last did we? I remember the one that we had, it was in Johannesburg at, what is that? Emperor's Palace. That was quite a successful conference. Thereafter, I don't remember. And then I heard doctors promoting that tourism should at least have conduct conferences, because there's a lot that we gather when we meet. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Mama Lule.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also join to thank the informative presentation, two of them. I want to be in the presentation of Dr. Ishmael on the proposal that every student after matric should have appreciation of tourism, and add also in the public participation that Bungi talked about. If we can remember, it was during our time in schools, we were having one study tour, starting from primary. Maybe they will say only the standard 5 ones, they will go to Devon or anywhere, which is part of practical teaching students how to tour. But now there are no more such kind of trips. The other one is that it's part of public participation. If you give students a competition, maybe a topic on tourism, how to maybe build a tourism in South Africa, and they will tell you how they feel to how South Africa must be in terms of growing tourism. There are no more such things. So it means we lack that kind of public participation to make people to be part of what we are doing. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Let me allow for the responses, and then thereafter, perhaps there could be other questions. Do not know, perhaps let us follow the order that we had.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Manjove asked the issue of our contribution in terms of tourism into the 365,000 jobs. How much do we really have, how much have we really contributed as tourism to the 365,000 jobs? And the thing is, for us, that is a bit difficult to find out. That's why I had the slide where with the different sectors, where it's transport, it's trade, it's financial and business services. In many instances, such surveys are done by independent companies like your Grant, Grant Thornton and all those kind of things. But in terms of the labor force survey, what it does is just looks at the different sectors according to the way government sectors people. And the other weakness that we have in terms of the tourism department is that we don't capture the amount of jobs that are created in the tourism sector. What we do is, even when we're setting targets for job creation within the department, we say full-time equivalent jobs, which is not really necessary, does not really give you an indication of what is a full-time indicative job. Last year, it was even difficult for them to explain what a full-time equivalent job is. How long does it last? What is the whole impact of a full-time equivalent job? Because it might be a year, it might be 6 months, and it might be a full-time equivalent job, depending on the hours that you work. So those are the difficulties that we need to iron out, because the targets for the department are full-time equivalent jobs and temporary equivalent jobs. They're not full-time jobs. They're not temporary jobs. So the terminology that is used is also a confusion in itself to say, when we're saying we're creating jobs at the Department of Tourism, what jobs are we creating really? And on the issue of the EPWP, I think there was a misunderstanding. What I said was that as the tourism department, that is where we should be creating jobs. The Expanded Public Works Program should be working for this department to create jobs. It is not doing so. It failed in the last financial year to provide sufficient jobs or to have enough projects that were going to be able to provide jobs. There were no projects that were there, which is why Treasury had to take back about $22 million that was not used by the department. So those are the kind of things that we had. And I actually highlighted that in the biannual, what they reported to us was that they had projects, they were picking up speed, but looking at the figures that they had given us by that time, it was still clear that they were not going to meet the targets unless then they do three times what they've done in the first two quarters. Meaning that they're left with two quarters. In the first two quarters, they did not go halfway their target. So we're hoping that in the last two quarters, they will double the target. I don't know how, but that is our hope. And which is why I said that it is very important for the committee to see the projects that they're running, because all we do is to hear about these projects. We don't even know where they are. We don't even know their impact. And when we went and did oversight in Limpopo, we figured out that some of the projects actually there for a year, some of them are not even finished. So we might be reported to in the committee that there are projects that are running in terms of the Expanded Public Works Program, but there are projects that have been left deliberated and they're no longer working for those communities. So those are the kind of things that we need to look at, because, yes, they might say we have done this project, this is how much we have given this particular project, but that might not really translate to job creation, because maybe the project was not finished, or maybe somebody left the project hanging. And in terms of information from Home Affairs and so forth, it was just difficult to get the information now because of the short period between the SONA and now. But I have sent an email to request for that information to say how many visa waivers were done this year, in that particular year. And I think Honorable Farrow is very correct that it will be very more progressive to get the department here to be able to outline these are the visa waivers for the different countries, and so that we can be able to correlate it with our target markets in terms of the tourists that we want to come here, where we invest more in marketing and so forth. So I think those are the questions that were asked, if I'm not mistaken. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair, I want to thank the members for the positive comments, and I appreciate that. With regard to education, offering the tourism as a subject at schools, I don't have the figures in terms of how many schools tourism education is being taught. I would like to propose that we invite the Department of Education to give us feedback as to the number of primary and high schools that offer tourism as a subject. I think they would be in a better position to answer that question. And also, if there are any shortcomings, as the tourism department, we could be of assistance to them. From my own experience, when students enroll at the university, we find that, yes, they study tourism, but when you assess what they know, then it's dangerous. You know, so that is all I can comment, and that's why I would suggest that we invite the Department of Education in that regard. Also, I like the comment about the research opportunities and conferences. We have a number of researchers in the country. We have a number of institutions in the country that offer tourism as a subject, right up to doctoral level. And I think it is the opportunity to get or invite all the academics to come together and to share their experiences and knowledge with the tourism industry. And we could use the Indaba as a platform where we could assign maybe a half a day or a full day where tour operators, people within the industry, they can be informed about the kind of research that is being undertaken, the new markets that is available, marketing approaches, marketing strategies, and people out in the industry, they need this kind of information. And if that platform is afforded, believe me, institutions or higher education institutions, they will take up that that invitation, and they will, you know, come to the party. Also, with regard to, I just want to say something about the MOU that we're planning to sign with the National Department of Tourism. At CPUT, we have a fully-fledged tourism and events department, and we have the capacity to undertake research. Now, what we've identified is that research is being undertaken by independent companies, and lots of money is generated or spent towards that. However, as an institution, we don't demand or we don't ask for that kind of money. What we are saying is, give us the project, let us research, and when we deliver papers, when we present papers, and when we submit papers for journal publications, that is where we, as an institution, get money. And that is how the department, National Department of Tourism, can assist us in that regard. And therefore, we've identified this need to sign this MOU so that, you know, we sort of can work hand in hand with the National Department of Tourism so that when we produce research, it is of benefit to National Department of Tourism and to the tourism industry as a whole. And I would like to see, you know, things developing after the signing of that MOU. I think those were the comments I'd like to make. Thank you. Thanks for reminding me. The economy. The Green Economy Accord. Just to shed some light on that, at COP17, this is where an agreement was signed with various stakeholders. And, for example, what is being done is, what is being done is that homes are being given geysers, you know, that uses natural sunlight in order to save the environment. And with that kind of initiative, it can filter down to tourism in terms of your accommodation sector. If you look at your B&Bs, your hotels, any form of accommodation, if they can also introduce the solar panels to heat water, they will save the economy a substantial amount of money and electricity, for example. We're talking of recycling. And the idea behind this Green Accord is how do we save the environment? And as a tourism industry, we need to get on board and you know, and see how we can save and recycle. With this, lots of research will have to go into it, and this is where, you know, when we have conferences, and that is the opportunity that we need to use in order to communicate and inform and educate. Thank you.
Okay, in fact, let us first check whether you are satisfied with the responses before we get to your questions.
one issue which I raised relating to, just in my own mind, to get some sort of fix on figures per tourist. How many jobs? Is there such a norm? And is that a way to actually try and get some sort of fix on the number of jobs?
Thank you very much. I'm going to give you an answer from an academic point of view and from research and what I've read. Research indicate to us that for every 16 tourists that come to the country, one job is created.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we definitely are interested in this memorandum of understanding that we intend signing with the department. You know, because this is something that we have been talking about in this committee, the coordination between the department and institutions of higher learning, particularly in the area of research, but also in the area of defining and identifying the content for tourism as it should be put in the school. So thank you for the advice about us meeting the education department. I hope we get something out of that. But what I wanted to ask now as a follow-up to that comment is whether you have memoranda of understanding with other departments. Because, you know, our visit to Moscow revealed to us how much, not that it was not new, but the visit revealed to us that it is possible and that it is very important and that it is very useful for departments to use institutions of higher learning for research.
Thank you for the comment and question. As you can see, the title that I have is Head of Department for Strategic Projects and Initiatives. Sometimes the title can be elusive, but let me just explain to you what I do. My responsibility at the institution is to sign MOUs with institutions the world over. And that is what I do. And I've seen the advantages and benefits we as an institution have when we sign these MOUs with universities in terms of research collaboration, student and staff exchanges. For example, our staff, they've never left the shores of South Africa. And when they go to a university abroad, they come back with an experience. It's just unbelievable. And they just talk about it, and that gets translated into the classroom. In terms of their own research, there are many staff members that go over and further their own research. There are times that we are, as a university, constrained in terms of research material. And when they go abroad, they have access to the library and tons of material. So I'm convinced that having memorandum of understanding, it's a two-way exercise, and both parties will benefit. And therefore, I believe that the MOU with the National Department of Tourism will benefit both the department and our institution.
Thank you, Chen. I just wanted to add on the issue of the number of tourists that create the job. Dr. Ismail is right. Currently, it's a 16 tourists create one job. But all of that is dependent on the tourist spend. It's dependent on a number of things. So it's not a consistent number that is going to be, it's 16 tourists that create one job. It might have slightly changed depending on how many tourists have come to the country this year or last year. And the fact that we don't have consistent statistics in terms of how many tourists come to the country and how many leave and how much they spend, that is also a hindrance in trying to figure out the real amount, and that has to be aligned with the tourist spend because it's dependent on that.
Well, in fact, we have been talking about this thing on slide 14. Dr. Ismail, you say that in my assessment of the state of the nation as stressed I stated that tourism is boosted by improving tourism infrastructure and hosting more international sporting events. Perhaps if you look at the Commonwealth Games, and then look at Bukasa, would it be possible to formulate games around Bukasa? Brazil, the alliance like Brazil, India, China, and so forth, and it breaks up. What is the likelihood? Are there any ingredients in terms of sports, commonality on sports like soccer, rugby, and so forth? Or can that mix be attractive enough to benefit partly South Africa and the other countries as well?
Honourable Chair, thank you for the question. Indeed, it is an opportunity. It can be done. We have the infrastructure based on the experience we had during the World Cup. And it's a question of inviting tourism sport bodies to our country and hosting these events. Now, hosting the event is not just the game of soccer. It involves accommodation, transport, spending of money, the players that come and visit or that participate in the sport itself. At some stage or the other, they will come back to bring their families. When they go back home, they talk to their families about the experience. And that is what the sport can do. And sport, like any other sport, is like music. Everybody associates with it. It speaks to everybody. And so, indeed, Honourable Chair, it can happen. We need everybody's participation, and everybody needs to pull together, and we can host any sport event. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. And then the other area, I think it's page 6 of your report. Obviously, slide 6. It has been referred to before as a question, but I think the understanding of there could be a fade in approach on the issue of education. You say that every student after matriculating should have an appreciation of tourism and understand how it contributes to the GDP of the country as well as the potential it has to create jobs. I think here, this taking this further, I do not think that it can only benefit students of tourism, as the discussions have developed now. But I think it can also be part of this thing which is called life orientation, where people's minds become alive to new possibilities, and then if it is discussed in that way, partly I think it could also be covered there, especially to the youth, and then the issue of tourism going out as well to the Department of Education. And then sitting with whoever is dealing with curricula and advance this argument, I think that would be one of the most potent arguments, because education as it stands, it is part of the new growth path. It is part of the programs. And then it falls also within the National Planning Commission long-term plans. Because if you look at the water that is going to be provided by dams. Water is not only for drinking, but it is also used for recreation, for tourism, and so forth. If dams are big enough, I think there is also that the boost of possibilities. But I think the nation has got to also have more dialogue. And then I think universities are better placed to interact with education, and to try and and have a dialogue, and then they would respond and so forth. But they have obviously their priorities, but looking within at it as part of the greater economic growth plan, I think it would have it would share a new perspective, because as it has done to us as well, that people have got to be aware. In Mexico, how they do it, you find that classes are touring all heritage sites. Small children and different ages, they are touring even up to the matric age. We met at the pyramids there. Those were older, but it's telling the story of the nation, and then people are beginning to be affected by those stories. But I don't know of your comment on that, Dr. Ismail, because here as a nation we need solutions, and then that's why we educated you.
If I can just add something to that, the idea of introducing tourism as a subject, it will lend itself to training more teachers to teach tourism, job creation. It means writing textbooks, there's job creation. Funding, touring, you're going to use buses, you're going to have tourist guides. So the potential is just enormous. And the opportunity awaits us, and we should take advantage of that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Dr.
It's
12 o'clock, and then it is time for us to move on. But before moving on, does anyone like to thank the presenters? Or should I do it on your behalf? So, thank you very much, Ms. Dooley and Dr. Ismail. It was quite a rewarding experience. We have learned a lot from the experience, and in terms of growth, development, and poverty reduction, I think it is quite valuable. And we, in terms of the proposals that we have made, like having seminars for say sustainable economic development and so forth, we shall look into it and then we shall discuss it. But our position as a portfolio committee is that we shall have another summit next year. We allowed to time to develop, and then perhaps it could be a bigger summit, we do not know, and then we shall apply for funding as soon as possible. But we also would like to involve even more universities, even more academics and research institutions. But above that, the role of the summit was also to have everyone in one roof saying they are having their say, and then coming up with a resolution. Unfortunately, last year it was the first time we could not resolve together on priorities, because what we wanted to have was that these then are our priorities. This is what we shall all going to do. We will go out and do. And as a way of having this dialogue to move forward. Now, even better now, we are having this National Planning Commission. Most probably, by the time we have the next summit, the plan will be there. So we'll then try and fit ourselves as tourism in that plan. And we would like to have every one of you and different universities. But I do not know of the timing, whether it will still be March, and February, March, or it should be during the tourism month. But you tend to have too many events during the tourism month that are tourism. So now you get overshadowed. Rather than perhaps it's better that just to come out of step, yes, but you get more prominent. I think that is what we believe should happen. But we thank you, Dr. Ismail and Mr. Dooley, not only you, but also your principals and your institutions that allowed you to grace this committee, and you are very much welcome, and we thank you very much. And then one of the ways of thanking you would be to take some of the proposals that you have made for one. But once more, thank you very much. Then that takes us to the minutes of the meeting that we had last week. What we have decided to do is to try and, as soon as possible, have minutes of the committee. So without much ado, let us, I think you all have copies of the minutes, and then let us go to those copies and look at them. And then after 3 minutes, then we shall raise matters arising. Okay, 3 minutes reading time, and then attendance and all those things. Okay. I assume that we're all finished now. Page one. It's page one and page two. Page one only is attendance and apologies. Right, page two. I do not understand now what Company A and Company B meant. I know it was explained, but could we get the picture, a fuller picture? You remember it was membership across the country. Currently is at 192 provinces, KwaZulu-Natal 192, Northern Territories 540, Eastern Cape 59, Western Cape 290, individual members 300. And then we have this Company A, 277 members, and Company B, 14 members. Mr. Farouk. Okay. Now I understand. I think we've got to add that clarification, because really company A and company B. Now I do remember the other one contributed 10,000. The other one contributed less, 3,000. Now I remember. The contributions they made to the bill that we are likely to receive later this year, it's there, every member has got it, eh? Their contributions to that. Because when we deal with that bill, we shall have to have contributions from different stakeholders. Then Saki was, the 263, Saki was to provide input into the draft national events strategy. That one, that is, do we have that input?
That input
is to the department. Okay. So page 2, we understand and therefore adopt it now, eh? That was page 3. Then page 4. We assured ourselves by cross referencing 611, and because we're going to be sure that in the, when it is read 10 years later, when there is no one, just let us just make sure of that. Then page 5, Mr. Farouk.
I'm just saying, we still have those moths flying around instead of months.
Okay.
That is the correction.
That's the correction.
Amendment. On page 5, paragraph 4.6, line 1, to delete the word 4 to 6 months, and then substitute by the word 4 to 6 months. Yeah, it has been corrected. Now, at least now we have butterflies. Then, 6. Then, should we adopt the minutes with the distinct amendments? Adopted with amendments, and then any seconder? Mamzigalala. And with the seconding, I think we that was the last item, and with those words, then let us close the meeting and thank you very much for your cooperation and for your deliberations. Thank you very much. Thank you.